Coming to you from Orange County, California, this is the Jug Life Podcast with Max Ada and Chad Wesley Smith.
Hey everybody, Chad Wesley Smith here, bringing you another episode of the Jug Life Podcast. For the first time not joined by the notorious MAX Max Montana, but I do have a trio of guests. I mean, by weight, we definitely have the most guests that we've ever had here. Trio of world championship team members in the shot put, Ryan Whiting, Darrell Hill, and Ryan Krauser. And we're down here in San Diego at an undisclosed location, so the USOC doesn't track me down again. I've had issues with them in the past. So these guys kind of just finished up the meat of the track season in Europe a few weeks ago, and are sort of beginning the new season right now. But take a minute and introduce yourselves.
I'm Ryan Whiting, six-time NCAA champion shot and disc. This is my eighth year as a pro. I've won two indoor world championships, been on the Olympic team in London, and one outdoor world runner-up. Some of the lifts, since that's what you guys are probably interested in. I've snatched 160 kilos, power cleaned 207, jerked about 235, squat 320, all in kilos. I think I've deadlifted 340-ish, something like that, and bench 255. So not your typical strict pause bench. I've probably done 230 that way, but
250. I was like
255 benching.
Kilos worse.
Really?
When I switched to powerlifting, yeah.
I'm really good at the thick bar pause. I mean, that's what I did the 230 pause with. Right. Yeah, I think I did 230 for two.
I'm Darrell Hill, 2017 Diamond League champion, 2016 Olympic team member, 2017 World Championship team member. My PR is 2244, that's in meters, and my best bench press is 230 kilos, best squat is about 300 kilos, best clean is about 175 kilos, and best snatch is about 125 kilos. What else did you say?
You runner-up NCAA?
Yeah, runner-up in NCAAs in 2015, and that's about it.
2 years into your pro career?
Yeah, this will be. We're going into. I just turned 24. Yeah, so we're going into my third professional season.
I'm 30.
Okay. All right. And I'm Ryan Krauser, 25 years old now, and Olympic gold medalist in Rio, and world championship team member in 17. And so I've been throwing since I was pretty young. I'm at training age, almost as old as Whiting, I think.
Probably older.
Yeah.
When did you start?
Actually started when I was about 12.
So, yeah,
13. Yeah. Going up on 13.
14.
Yeah.
Six or seven years.
All right. And so won a few NCAA championships. As far as my lifts, at a little disadvantage, being a little taller, but clean about 185, snatch 145, bench 220 for a double, and back squat, usually go parallel box. I think I did 320 for a double, and front squat just a little over 500.
You guys have real big jumping numbers, any of those?
I've done vertical 34 and a half or 35 at about 300 pounds, and then 317 standing broad jump. So combine wise, we'd be up there. Yeah. And then the bench stuff, that's what we're really good at. And I've done 55 with 225. So I don't know what your jumping numbers.
Yeah, I haven't done a vertical test since I was like a freshman in college back in 2012. But I got 29 and a half inches, and I was about 320 pounds then. So my best broad jump is 306 in meters. So.
Do you ever do a 40?
Yes, in high school, my best 40 was 499. Okay. On the laser, it's official.
Yeah. You just say 49, right?
Yeah, it's 499.
Yeah.
You subtract 0.24 for electric, so.
And it might not be evident because I'm around small people, big-ish people, so I look really big, and now I probably look normal in this crowd. Yeah. I scooted my chair up a little higher so I could gain some height on these guys, because you're, what, 6'7"? 6'7",
yeah.
6'7"?
6'3".
Yeah, so I need the extra boost from the height today. But obviously very impressive numbers, very impressive resumes. So we're looking forward to learning a lot of good stuff about, you know, training for power, competition mindset, a lot of good information that these guys are going to have today. So today's episode is brought to you by Gold Medals and Good Mornings. It's a lifestyle. Make sure to visit store.jtsstrength.com for new apparel we've got up like this. And we're going to take a quick break for a strength history minute, this time on Al Feuerbach, which I thought would be appropriate, 70-foot shot putter, just like these gentlemen. And when we come back, we'll be talking to Ryan, and Darrell.
Al Feuerbach is an athlete who excelled in multiple strength disciplines and displayed freakish athleticism. At only 5'10" tall, relatively diminutive for world-class shot putters, Feuerbach broke the world record with a throw of 21.82 meters, 71 feet, 7 inches, breaking another great Randy Mattson 7-year-old record. Feuerbach also utilized the glide technique, a throwing style normally reserved for taller throwers, making it particularly impressive for him to do it. He's also a 4-time U.S. champion in the shot put, finished second in the heavyweight division of weightlifting nationals. At 110 kilo body weight, Feuerbach snatched 155 and clean and jerked 190. Feuerbach should also be inducted into the 1970s Hair Headband Hall of Fame to go along with his amazing strength exploits. Feuerbach possessed amazing jumping ability. At nearly 250 pounds body weight, he's reported to have completed a standing broad jump of 3.78 meters, 12 feet 5 inches, 2 inches farther than the best result ever at the NFL Combine.
All right, so we are back from learning about one of the legends of American shot putting, Al Feuerbach. So what's a typical, maybe a training day or a day in the life of an Olympic gold medalist look like? And, you know, maybe a sample week of a full-time and professional athlete. There are people who pretend that they're professional powerlifters, but they don't understand that means that you actually make money and don't have another job. But you guys are actual professional athletes. So what's a typical day and week for you?
Yeah, so for me, it kind of changes throughout the year, because obviously when I'm about to start now, it's all focused on in the weight room, and then kind of as the season progresses, focus more on throwing. But in general, I usually throw 4 to 5 days a week. I usually do that in the morning, and then have a auxiliary session usually before or after lifting of kind of a plyometrics, so focus on jumping, sprinting, or med ball. And then so I'll usually throw a lift in the afternoon, and so it's usually about an hour and a half throwing, maybe an hour sprints, med ball, auxiliary, and then 2 hours in the weight room is kind of a usual day. Sometimes it's and that's kind of plus or minus, can not get stretched out to 2 hours each session or shortened down to about an hour each session.
And so with, you know, 4 to 6 hours a day of training, I figure you got to be doing a really proactive job of massage, ice bath, all that kind of stuff. What do you guys like for
eating?
Yeah, well, and eating. Yeah. Well, what do you like besides, maybe you can tell me your favorite meal, but the recovery modalities are you guys using to be able to train that much?
Yeah, so I'm a big fan of just massage and chiro. So I've used massage at least once a week for 1 hour sessions. Anytime your body's loaded up like that in training, keeping everything loose and then the chiro to keep it in the right place. I mean, for me, most of my injuries usually happen because something hips, back is out of place and compensating somewhere for it. So just making sure everything is moving well really helps recovery in itself.
Have you worked with my friend, Dr. Kevin Pierce, here?
I have. Yeah. He's a good guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, for me, waking up in the morning and just kind of assess how your body feels. Being 30, you don't think 30 is too old until you are 30. And you start feeling all the, like, aches and pains. So I'll wake up, do, like, kind of, like, modified yoga, big man yoga, lay on the ground. I have a giant green shag carpet for my kids.
What size Lululemon pants do you wear?
They don't fit. You should. I don't know if you have any, but
I thought they just got extra see-through.
Oh, yeah, they do. Recently saw Brian Shaw in a pair of Lululemon hot pants, and it's not great. I roll in the morning, kind of stretch out, try to feel a little better, get ready for the day. Drop my kids off at school, and I just do the typical massage. Not much chiro anymore. Not that I don't like it. It's just not as readily available, in Phoenix where I train as it is here at the training center. So.
And you have two kids?
Yeah, I have a 2-year-old and a 4-year-old.
And a 4-year-old's the size of an 8-year-old?
Yeah, he's 55 pounds, wears like a size 2 shoe, so probably about the same size as Marissa.
This is the same size as Marissa.
Yeah.
Yeah. He has a pair of size 1.5, but she claims that she's a size 3, which I think she has a pair of 3s.
Yeah, we get all the free Nike shoes. I'll send her some. Just some hand-me-downs.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, little boy's Velcro shoes for her.
My 4-year-old grew out of these, so yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, just a huge part of what we do is, since we rotate so much and it's not just the single plane like lifting, we got a lot of like hip imbalances and knees, ankles, just twisting your joints and yeah. Trying to be explosive is tough on you. So, as you know,
you have to remind. So I turned the shot put from when I was 8 years old until I was 23. And a 100-meter sprinter back then as well, Irvine Cougars. Southern California champions, 4 white kids, don't worry about it. But and then so I stopped throwing in, I think, 2010, and came and did Highland Games last year. So I went up to UCLA for the day, John, Coach Frazier, and he let me throw with the team, and I hadn't moved fast, you know, faster than maybe a box jump for 5 or 6 years, and hadn't moved in anything besides up and down with a barbell for 5 or 6 years. My right ass cheek, right oblique, and I mean, for 2 weeks were fucked up after that. It was definitely if you don't use it, you lose it, yeah. Kind of thing.
You get that good like hip numbness and
yeah, it was
bend around your knee.
I was feeling very, very bad. But so right now you guys are in your fall, the earliest training period, and a lot of throwers would call it in fall conditioning or whatever, but with GPP sort of more the focus at this time of the year, what are a couple of things that you're doing now to build up your work capacity as you progress through towards the long season?
For me, it's just usually losing a little weight, just trying to feel a little more comfortable, because we're pretty high above our set points, a lot of us, especially Ryan. He would be probably 60 pounds lighter if you had the choice.
Yeah, probably about 230, 240.
Yeah. So for me, I go from like 310 at the end of the season and just try to feel healthy. That's the biggest thing. And I'll just sit on the stationary bike at home, kind of just do fat loss in the morning, BCAs, and then I hop on the bike for half an hour to an hour and burn some fat, take my kids to school, come back, ride a little more. I'll do a little bit in the weight room, but mostly it's just trying to get away from all the really high pressure, like heavy squats. I haven't squatted above body weight in months, and or month and a half about. And right now I'm just doing 15s with like kind of CrossFit-y movements and just getting in shape. And I swam a mile yesterday, which is something that my wife was a swimmer, so she was proud of me.
Yeah.
It's hard as hell to swim straight. I was turning out towards the ocean constantly. but I told him yesterday that I'd never run a mile, which I'm pretty proud of.
You should be proud of that.
Yeah, I'm very proud of that.
I don't know how you got, I mean, all the way through junior high PE and stuff, how'd you always...
Yeah, they had the presidential fitness, but I would just jog a lap, walk a lap, jog a lap, walk a lap. Coming in at 11:54.
So you've traveled a mile by foot.
Obviously, yeah. But never run a mile. I'll never do that on purpose. Yeah. It's just...
You're also getting a good mix of, like, rowing, beer-chugging intervals going.
Yeah, I went over to Jordan Clark's house. I think I had, like...
Former podcast.
Yeah, he was on. He's a giant guy, one of the strongest guys I know, and he... We both have kids now, so our wives came out to San Diego, and I went over to his house for the night. We drank a bunch of beer, and then I rode 9,000 meters, which... Don't do it.
No, I wasn't.
Felt like foam was just coming up my throat as I was doing it. But yeah, just a lot of that stuff. I mean, nothing crazy. I try to keep it so I minimize the risk of injury. Just super low impact, and try not to do anything rotational. It's the biggest thing, I think.
For me, this particular year, like with last season kind of being so long, it's all about rest and kind of just making sure, like he said, making sure the body's prepared for another long year, because, you know, we start up in January, we'll be done till by September. So it's just kind of like you said, losing a little bit of weight, some very light stuff in the weight room just to get some fluid back in the joints, but trying to stay away from those big heavy lifts and stuff like that for right now, just because the years are so long and you still so much wear and tear from the year before. So just a lot of like light running, cardio, get some weight off, some stretching, different type of things with med balls. And I've done a little bit of light squatting and light benching just to kind of get my body accustomed to the movement so that when I do start back up in a few weeks, I'm not kind of starting from ground zero. So this time of the year, pretty much for me especially, is just about getting the body back moving and getting off the couch and just getting prepared for another year.
It's hard wanting to do it again.
Yeah, they kind of take a long enough break until you start to miss it.
Yeah.
The end of the season, you're like, shepherding is whatever, and then get a good break and get hungry to do it again.
Yeah.
I remember being like in football season,
wanting to be throwing at the end of football season. Like, I can't wait for track season, and the end of track season, you're like, yeah, is football ready to start again?
Yeah. All right. And so for me, my season went a little bit longer. I went a week longer than these guys. 2 weeks longer. And so I actually just got back and then went elk hunting. And so we were archery elk hunting. So I was like 70 miles a week at over 7,000 to 8,000 feet elevation. So lost a little weight doing that. That was kind of my cardio, I guess. And so I'm about to start this next week with back. I haven't touched a weight in a month. And so when I get back, I usually do sets of 12 on with 1 minute rest between five sets of 12. So obviously lightweight. And that's kind of just jumping right into it. So I mean, I'll start with bench at like 80 100k, but sets at 12 and then 1 minute rest going on again. So mine's a little different than theirs, but I think everybody takes a little break and then comes back into essentially a basing phase. Mm-hmm. Doing something to get their volume up.
Yeah, I think, you know, for powerlifting and weightlifting, that's an element that I think people miss a lot. And I've had twice in the last 2 years really times where I try and go one powerlifting meet and the next and very heavy hard training and like just linking it back to back, and it's so hard to stay healthy trying to put, you know, for me 450 kilos on my back. So I get to the point where I'm like, yeah, I'm sick of this, I want to do something else. And then I pretend that I'm athletic again and do like some box jumps and some hill sprints and shit. But we attended a Ilya Ilyin seminar probably 4 years ago, and he said that he took 2 to 3 months of every year where he'd only do the lifts once a week. He would swim and play basketball. And obviously when you have an athlete who is on, you know, doping and stuff, they could get away with a longer time off because they can regain the fitness quicker. But there is definitely value, right? Mental value, physical value, and in a true off season like you guys are taking. So I think each of you have some unique information that you could bring for the guests. So starting with you, Ryan, you got a pretty extensive injury history. Yeah. So kind of recap some of those injuries and talk about, you know, how you've worked around those, worked through those to create, you know, a long professional career, and sort of the mental aspect of dealing with injury to stay moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, injury is, I mean, it's one of the hardest, probably the hardest thing to deal with in any sport. And for me, it wasn't even an injury. I was 2014, I won indoor worlds, came out, I was in the best shape of my life for outdoor. I went to China, I had I don't know if anyone knows what it is, pilonidal cyst. Do not Google it because you'll get some horrible images. It's just a cyst like right on your tailbone pretty much, and it just feels like you're sitting on a golf ball. And I got on a plane in Shanghai, got to Chicago, and I just felt like I was gonna die. Like, definitely infected. It was huge on my lower back, and I got home, my wife's a nurse, and she's like, that smells like the dog farted. And It was infection in my lower back. So I had to have like emergency surgery right in the middle of my outdoor season. And I lost 30 pounds in about 2 weeks. They took like a lemon sized lump out of my lower back, and I don't know, it's disgusting. They left it open. I had to pack it and all this crap that I had to go to a wound clinic for a while. And that just led to like a cascade because I tried to come back too quick. I overloaded myself and I started getting these, like, I probably tore my meniscus at some point then, and it just got worse and worse. And then I finally sheared it off in I guess last year. I had arthritis in my right knee, which I didn't know about. They told me it was something else. So I kept doing all the plyos and everything, and that ended up being a bone bruise and a little bit of degenerative cartilage that took 9 months to heal leading up to trials. And then at 4 days before trials, I tore my left calf when I was ready.
You're pretty armored up.
It was, yeah. I mean, I had like sleeve from nipple to ankle. but yeah, I mean, you really just have to tell yourself that. For me, it was just telling myself that I am who I am, and I know I can come back from this. I'd be lying if I didn't say I thought of retiring, and that I was only 28. And for us, the like peak of your career is 28 to 35, and that's just when you're starting to get the old man strength and all that. For me, it took a ton of patience from me and my wife because my income depends on me throwing far. And I had all 2015. I didn't make a team for the first time in 6 years. And you really just have to focus on the fact that you are good enough to be at that level again. And it's hard to convince yourself that you are. But this past year, I finally kind of broke back through. It's hard to explain, but I convinced myself that I am as good as I am, I guess is the best way to say it. But it's just, I'm a lot more conscientious about doing the little extra things that are going to keep me from having to go through that again, because it's horrible. I mean, anyone who's gone through it knows that it's quite a test. So, yeah, it's just things like knowing what the maximum volume your body can handle. I was probably doing a little too many plyos, a little too much in the weight room. And now I'm down to 3 days a week lifting. I don't do nearly as much volume, and, plyometrics I try to do in the pool. I do them on grass instead of on the hard track surface or concrete, or I do jumping in the sand. And I've added a lot more med ball stuff, which is just lower impact for us. And it's not easy. I mean, having a long career in this sport is tough because of all the three-plane motion that we go through. Just knees, ankles, they break down whether you like it or not.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I had the pleasure of being beat by Ryan many, many times in the shot put. Yep. And from junior nationals. Oh, yeah. And then, junior nationals all the time. So phenomenal talent. It was really, you know, cool as your friend and a fan of shot putting to see you be able to come back and have that, you know, great year this past season. And another man who had a great season, Darrell. So, yeah, as they're introducing themselves, you heard 6-time NCAA champion and however many of those Ryan's got, plus the gold medal and all this stuff. And Darrell's talking about runner-up stuff. But, so I think he was kind of, you know, flying under the radar for a lot of people, and then threw great at Olympic trials and made the Olympic team. But even then, it's like, well, it's Ryan Krauser and Joe Kovacs who's going to win. And then here comes the Diamond League. And the last meet of the year, who wins the Diamond League? Darrell Hill, 22:44. What is that in feet?
73.7.
So you talk about, you know, how you mentally approach competition and just, you know, staying sort of persistent and persevering, like, through, I'm sure, some things that were disappointing meets to finish the season the way that you did.
Yeah, I mean, I've always been kind of a big picture person. That's one thing that when I was growing up, it was something that I kind of developed, is the ability to be able to look at things in the big picture. And I view my career all the way back to when I started. And a person who's helped me out a lot with it is this guy right here. Just because when I first started, I was a 37-foot shot putter. And when I looked around the world, you know, mile split, I'm looking just to see, you know, what are people doing? Is people throwing 70 and 69. And so I'm just like, oh man, like people throw that far. And so it's always been just a constant climb. You know, I went from 37 to 43 to 51 to 53 to 60, you know, and just watching kind of that gap close a little bit between myself and the people up top. You know, it's a little different from football, because in the shop where you can watch the progress happen, you know, like, there is a difference between 60 and 61 that is exact improvement. So just kind of starting from all the way back there, I understand that the gap is closing, and I understand that it's not a sprint, it's a marathon. So every time I've taken a step, whether it's not necessarily been a step I wanted to take, I understood that I was taking a step in the right direction. So I can always take the positives from a situation and move forward. You know, like the NCAA runner-up thing, it sucks because me and John Jones, we tied. I mean, he won on second best mark. But the year previous, I had missed the final at the NCAA. So that was a step for me. The year before that, I missed qualifying for the NCAAs. And then, so I get the tie at NCAAs, and in 2016, I make the Olympic team. And then I don't make the final, and then 2017, I make the final. So just kind of putting everything in its big, in its proper perspective, and understanding that, you know, even though they may not be the leaps that you want them to be, just as long as you're taking a step in the right direction, at the end of the day, you might get to the goal. And so the goal is, you know, same as everybody else's world record and be the best there ever was. So, I mean, taking steps in the right direction all the time, I just got to be happy with, you know, however they are when they come.
And I think what Drell's talking about here is something we've talked about on this podcast many times, is the difference of goal orientation versus process orientation. And it's one thing, you know, to say, I want to win the gold medal, I want to, you know, set the world record. But when you're a 37 foot shot putter and you're, you know, 16 years old at that time, or 17 years old, that seems probably so unattainable. It would seem so unattainable because it's so far away. But to be able to do just as you're talking about, you know, finding these little victories and any level of progress that you can make, and you just keep repeating progress and progress and progress, and that progress is just adding up on top of itself to begin to realize the goals. And I think that's so important for people to focus on the process and what small thing can I improve that's going to help, you know, just chip away at the goal. Because in one day, you're not going from a 37 foot shot putter to an almost 74 foot shot putter. You know, there's so many of those little steps and parts of the process in between.
Double.
Yeah, just do that. Yeah, just do that one more time, Darrell.
Yeah, like, pretty much. Yeah.
Just 100, one more. 148.
The next 37. Yeah. That's my new hashtag. Next 37.
And for anyone who's a track and field fan, they probably know the name Krauser. And so Ryan and his cousins, or everyone throwing far, your dad, your uncles. I actually have one of your uncle's paintings hanging in my house.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah, so awesome. A bear painting, yes. Yeah. And I tagged him on Facebook. He didn't seem as pumped as I thought he was going to, but so your dad and your uncle's all through far as shit, and I don't know how many All-American certificates you guys have at your house, but probably use them as like placemats at this point. Like, oh yeah. And you had a great early exposure to throwing. And you know, I started throwing when I was 8 years old. Maybe you have better genetics than me or something, but you started throwing at 12 and did it, from the little bit I know of what you did, seem to do it in a very well thought out, very strategic manner. So if you could talk a little bit about some of your own training, starting out as an athlete, and maybe advice that you have for parents or coaches who are working with youth athletes.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely, a lot of people think, coming from a track and field family, oh, you must have just like got pushed into it, that was the first thing you did, you're just born with throwing shot. I actually didn't start until I could do it in middle school, and I think for me growing up, it was doing all sports was what has made a big difference. And I think seeing kids present day, they kind of just, you see kids focus on one sport year round so young, and you develop good early in that, but you don't develop all of your athletic ability that you would learn if you played soccer, baseball, and just doing sports almost all year. I think it's a key. And then also for me, when I started out, I did have really good progress early on. And I think that was from my dad and my family kind of starting me off on the right foot. And the biggest thing that for track and field specific, but you could also apply to weightlifting or really anything, was learning technique first. You see a lot of kids, they start and they just want to get, okay, I got to get big and strong if I want to throw far or even just lift heavy. I just got to go in there and just grind on the weights. But you see, I mean, for me, I was super skinny. I won state as a freshman. I was 170 pounds.
Like 6'5", 170
yeah,
pounds.
Like right? Six, yeah, about 6'2", 6'3", 170 pounds. So I looked like a 400-meter runner.
How many last time you were 170 pounds?
I don't know.
fifth grade for me.
Yeah, fourth grade. A really long time ago.
Yeah, so I won state as a freshman.
He only threw 37 before, now 74. Yeah. He used to weigh 170. You made it to 340.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There we go.
Yeah.
Darrell, double uphill.
Hopefully we don't get the next one.
Yeah, so for me, I mean, to be able to do that at being light and relatively weak, not strong at all, and the weight room was all technique. And so that would be the key that I would say for young kids is learn to be an athlete, do all the sports you can, don't focus too early. And then if you do start to find something that you like, I would say learn the technique and the fundamentals of it before you just focus on getting just strong. It's a lot easier to learn the technique and learn to be an athlete. And I think you can do that in powerlifting as well.
There's actually no athleticism in powerlifting. So,
well, you got a little bit of technique. You've got some guys, you see some weird guys that are strong, but they don't really squat very well.
Yeah.
So I think just as a younger athlete too, if you want to get started in powerlifting or really anything, learn the fundamentals and get your body moving in the right way before you worry about loading it up.
Yeah, if you're a younger athlete, don't start in powerlifting. Do real sports that involve athleticism. Since I used to be a real athlete, I can readily say that powerlifting doesn't require much athleticism. But yeah, what Ryan is talking about there, I think is, I mean, epidemic problem really in American sports of early specialization and everything. But And as I look back at my track career, some, it was all get strong as fast as I can, because that yielded a very fast result. And when I was 16 years old, I was like, well, I used to only throw 49. Now I throw 59 because, you know, my bench went up 80 pounds or something. I was like, I'll just do that again and it'll go up the same way. But it really limits the long-term potential because you can't feel the weight the same way. You don't have as much. Yeah, it's a lot of ways, I think, easier to learn technique when you're young, because you don't you don't have the bad habits. You develop better coordination, better motor patterns, all that stuff. And I think, you know, the way that you developed of technique first, maybe special strength, kind of, you know, different med ball throws and velocity, higher velocity stuff first, and let's sort of slow cook the strength part of things, because that's going to come. There's plenty of time to get strong and put pounds on the bar, is in a lot of ways like a more European approach to things, but a lot of very, very important lessons about youth training for any sport to be learned from the stuff that Ryan just said. Big part of track and field, the professional track and field scene, is traveling through Europe and traveling all over the world to compete. And you guys will be gone for kind of months at a time.
I come home because of my family, but he stayed over there for.
Yeah, I was there for like 9 weeks in Europe.
And I know that when you combine long foreign travels with dudes with a bunch of testosterone and
boredom.
Yes, boredom. And I think anytime that you're, you know, a really big guy walking around in a foreign place where most people are small, it draws some extra attention. And with that comes stories. So I need to hear some stories, some non-throwing, non-lifting stories. I mean, things might be thrown or lifted in them, but stories from the road. And this is, I don't know if it's a family show, but PG-13 stories from the road.
Quarter of the Joe Kovacs and Christian Campbell stories. I got a couple. I mean, one from college that sticks in my mind is Jordan Clark. He's like a cartoon character.
He's a live bear.
He's from Alaska. I mean, we're pretty sure he was raised by like bears or wolves or something. Although I know his mom should hit me in the face. One time my apartment was right next to a McDonald's, and we'd just eaten a team dinner. He ate like two racks of ribs and all the sides and everything. And I had a bottle of Everclear in my freezer. So three of us polished that off, and we're like, Jordan, that the deal at McDonald's was $5 for 50 nuggets. So we go, like, Jordan, how many nuggets do you think you can eat? And he's like, I could eat 40 nuggets. And we're like, bullshit, you could eat more nuggets than that. So we're like, I'll give you a dollar for every nugget over 50 you eat. So we go to McDonald's. Well, we drank all the Everclear first, of course. Yeah, walk to McDonald's because we're all about safety. I go up and I'm like, I'll take 250 nuggets, please. And the guy looks at me like, oh, that's going to take 10 minutes. Like, 10 minutes is the longest time in the world. And I was like, that's fine. And Jordan's like, I need sweet and sour sauce. And I was like, how many sweet and sour sauces do we get with that? And he's like, I'll give you like 20, 25 or something like that. And we sit down. Jordan starts eating. He ate 50 nuggets in like 6 or 7 minutes, just shoveling them in with sweet and sour sauce. He gets to 60, not much longer. And I'm just casually eating along with him. I ate like 40 at the end. He gets to 60. He'd eaten 15 sweet and sour sauces at this point. He's like, I'm kind of full. And the manager comes over to us and he's like,
one thing from Man versus Food. He should have gotten multiple different sauces. Got to change the flavor.
He should have. Yeah. It's a lot of sugar. He comes over. Manager comes over. He's like, guys, I see what you're doing. And if you're going to throw up, please just leave my restaurant. I do not want it in here. I don't want to clean it up. I don't want to deal with it. I see exactly what you're doing. It's fine. Just go outside. So I go, Jordan, if you get to 100 or...
You're being profiled as fat guys.
Yeah. Yeah. Size profiling. Yeah. And we were drunk. So no.
Who doesn't want two big drunk grizzly bears of men eating 250 chicken nuggets in their restaurant?
I figure there should be like a plaque on the wall.
You could have parlayed this into some great promotional material.
Yeah. So then I started looking up chicken nugget records and Black Widow or whatever, one of the female, she ate like 100 nuggets in 3 minutes, which was unattainable.
Yes.
And well, this was after a team dinner, so he probably could have done that. Jordan gets to 80 and I'm like, Jordan, if you get to 100, I will lay down on the ground and you can throw up all over me.
Oh, that's great motivation.
And he's like, okay, he gets his second wind. He gets to 90 nuggets and he's just hit a wall. 20 sweet and sour sauces in, which later on we figured out was about 800 calories just in sweet and sour sauce. And he's like, man, I can't do anymore. I just feel like on the edge. And we're like, okay, you eat. There are like 3 more left in the container he was in front of. And you're like, eat these 3. We'll go outside and you can throw up on, like, I'll stand up and you can puke on me. And we go outside. Well, he eats 3 more. We go outside. He ended up with 93, which is respectable. It's decent. Yeah. We go outside and he can't manage to puke. Like, I'm puking all over the place because I ate 40 of them and I just feel sick as a dog. And he couldn't puke, which was really lucky for me.
Punch him in the
digital. No, he would have killed me. He's like, he's a bear. He'd mauled me. And I talked to him the next day and I was like, Jordan, how do you feel? And he was like, this was midnight, maybe we get done. And he's like, I didn't fall asleep till 5 a.m. I was just like sitting in my bed vibrating and shaking. And he said the next morning he shit like a Nerf ball. Just a giant Nerf ball of chicken nugget foam. Yeah, I mean, that is one of the most fun times I've had in college, like spur of the moment, most fun times. On the road, I mean, it's just, you have so much boredom. I'm sure in Belgium for 9 weeks, you were just so bored. A lot of it is eating. A lot of it is drinking after meets. Yeah, I mean, with the big characters we have, like Christian Cantwell said he drank like 73 beers in a day or something like that, which is just...
like Andre the Giant type.
Yeah. I mean, he didn't eat like 30 lobsters, but he did drink a ton of beer. It's just a lot of people being very intimidated by our size, like bouncers coming up to us when we go into a casino, like, guys, we don't want to deal with you if you get out of control. It's just, I'm one of the smaller ones. Christian Cantwell's 6'6", 340. Dylan Armstrong was about the same size, 370. We just go into places and the bouncers are just, please calm down. Breaking toilets off the ground in hotel rooms, just all kinds of big man stuff and harassing people at airports. It's just, you get bored. I don't know about you guys.
Stories to add here?
I should have went first because mine is a little less exciting, but this story, the moral of the story is, you know, choose your friends wisely. I'm glad I got this guy here for this one. This was back in 2015. I had just finished up at school and I was training, like I was training all the way till September because there was an opportunity that I may be able to get into a meet overseas. My agent was able to get me to a small meet in Germany, which would be my first time ever in Europe. Never, ever have I ever been in Europe or really outside of the U.S. area at all. So I'm going, and I get there, and I get to the hotel. What?
You asked me first.
Yeah, I asked him. I said, hey, like, you know, because he was training at Penn State this time. And I'm like, hey, Ryan, like, you know, what are some things I should, like, be prepared for? What are some things I should, you know, like, you've been to Europe, spent months there. What are some things? So he gives me, you know, the ins and outs pretty much. And I go and I feel pretty prepared. And I get there. I get to the hotel and my phone's on about 35% after a long day of travel. And so I'm in my hotel room and I've got my Apple charger and I'm trying to plug it into the wall. And I'm looking and I was like, man, these wall ports are really different. So I'm like trying to, like, you know, I'm trying to jam it in there. Right. I'm trying. And I went to every outlet in the room and like maybe like one of them be different. And then I realized that Ryan, my mentor, never told me that the charger ports in the walls in Europe were different than they were in America. So I go down to the hotel check-in desk. Imagine, I'm the first person here, so nobody's here. It's already a small meet, so not many people are coming at all, but I'm just the first person there. And so I'm talking to the lady. She doesn't speak much English, and I'm like, phone, charge. Like, I'm trying to, like, trying to tell her, like, phone, charge.
Yeah, like hand motions. Like
yeah, that. Yeah, right. And it looks so bad. She's like, no. I was like, is there a store? So she gives me directions to this mall. And mind you, now I'm in the middle of, not like Berlin, it's a small place in Germany. It's a small town.
Mannheim?
No, it was Bad Kostritz. Oh, yeah. So I'm big, black guy, tattoos. You know, I'm fitting the profile.
People and, crossing the street.
Yeah, and I get there, and I got a USA hoodie on. So I'm definitely not from here. And it's my first time ever in Europe, so I'm not really that comfortable either. So I'm walking. I've got a map in my hand, so I look like a tourist, and I'm walking down to this mall, and like I'm following the directions pretty good, and I see a lady walking, so I ask her, I'm like, excuse me, ma'am, and she's like, and she just like does it. I'm like, oh, crap, so I stop talking to her, so I keep walking.
She's like, oh my God, it's Charles Barkley.
Yeah. Right, and so I get to this mall, and luckily the store was like the first place there. I get in, and like people are like kind of looking like, you know, I'm just like real uncomfortable. I get my charger, I get back to the hotel, and then I immediately just text Ryan like, you're terrible, you didn't let me know. And he's like, till to this day, doesn't think that it was his responsibility. Even though I asked him politely, you know, what are some things I should be prepared for? He gave me everything but that one thing.
You're a college educated adult at this point, supposedly.
Correct. Shout out to Penn State. All
right, Krauser, what do you got for us?
I mean, yeah, so there's a lot of kind of partying that goes on towards the end of the year. It gets like progressively worse. At the beginning of the year, everyone is really well behaved. And then you kind of, after world championships, the wheels kind of come off and every meet gets worse and worse until like the last meet of the year tends to be in Croatia, in Zagreb. And so we had eight of us about?
Yeah, they do.
So they try and get a relatively top eight guys.
Was this year or last year?
Last year.
Oh, okay.
And so last year, yeah, it's just the after meet meal. And there's so eight shot putters, the three of us, Joe.
Giant goat roast.
Yeah, yeah, or the lamb.
Lamb roast.
Joe yeah. Kovacs, it's us three, Joe Kovacs, Tom Walsh.
Kamal
Messing, and Stipe Zunin.
A couple guys from the Czech Republic.
Yeah, Thomas Stanek.
I think Stanek's the smallest guy, and he's like 275, yeah, 280, yeah. And so is Tom. But besides him, everyone is over 300 pounds. So they roast a whole lamb, and they have an open bar. And so we just start, everyone's, all right, Jack Daniels, because that's like the only thing we could understand of anything on the menu. And so he's ordering Duble Jacks. It's the only Croatian we know is Duble.
Duble.
And so double Jacks for everyone. And then finally, after less than an hour, they had one case of Jack Daniels, and they came back. Yeah, we're completely out. And so, yeah, the eight shot putters drank a case of Jack Daniels, and then we moved on to some Croatian whiskey after that.
You gotta tell them about Stanek.
After we ate a whole lamb, too. And then the night ended with a shot putter throwing his shot put in his room.
The morning.
Well,
I was leaving the hotel.
I forgot about that, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm leaving the hotel. and these guys are stumbling in. Joe Kovacs and this Czech Republic kid, and Czech kid's just like staring at the ground, wobbling, and just does not know where he is. Then I hear later, I get to the airport, I hear later that he got into his room, he was pissed off about how he did, took his shirt off, throws it on the ground, takes his shot put, and just starts pounding it into the carpet. And this is just 16-pound steel ball, just banking it off the carpet into the wall in a hotel room, tearing the shower apart. And I'm at the airport, and he's supposed to be there, getting on his flight. And I hear, Thomas Stanek, please get on your aircraft. And I see him over sleeping in the corner. I'm like, I'm helping this kid.
Well, I'm gonna have to like book a seminar that lines up with the Diamond League meet, because they sound fun. They sound very fun.
Is the place to be.
Yeah,
we're pulling.
Well, thank you guys for a lot of great information. I think people are going to be able to take a lot of stuff with that for their training, regardless of what sport they're in. So to kind of just wrap things up, make sure if you're a fan of the Jug Life, go on iTunes, give us a 5-star review, write us something nice or funny. Maybe I'll read it on the air, and then maybe you can email me and I'll send you something for free. Like B-Dub What, who says, I always learn something new when I listen to the Jug podcast or when I watch one of their YouTube videos. They consistently post quality information. Also, Chad's one of the nicest guys ever, and Max is brilliant. Oh, this guy's so nice. Love this podcast. Look forward to listening each time a new episode is posted. Thanks for the hard work. Well, the work's really not that hard, but if you like the podcast, make sure to go on iTunes, let us know, helps us in the ratings there, so more people can find us. Beyond that, I have upcoming seminars in Minneapolis and in Ireland. Max will be in Boston, so be on the lookout for that. If you're interested in online coaching for powerlifting, weightlifting, or super total, visit juggernautcoaching.com. And as always, subscribe to our YouTube, as we're very proud of the content that we post there. Where can they find you guys on the social medias?
All of mine are at Ryan Whiting USA, RyanWhiting USA.
All mine are at B1G Homie, so it's at B1G HOMIE with an underscore on Instagram.
And I'm mostly just on Instagram, just at R. Krauser.
All right. Easy enough. Well, make sure, go check these guys out. Cheer them on while, competing for Team USA and all that good stuff. I'm Chad Wesley Smith, at Chad Wesley Smith, and at Juggernaut Training on Facebook and Instagram. Filling up your news feed all day. Till next week. See you then.